Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself.
Here, the week before our fifth annual National Mayor's Ride begins in Boston, we spent some time on the phone there with fascinating recycling artist Matthew Mazzotta. Matthew is the main driving force behind the amazing 15-person bicycle that will be touring the San Francisco Bay Area with us this July, where this year's campaign ends.
So, Matthew, how are you doing today, guy?
Not too bad, Martin. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. I'm glad to hear that you're out there in Boston and you're rocking and rolling. Now I've got, before we talk about your exciting bicycle, is that the correct pronunciation?
The bicycle.
Not a bike, not a bus cycle, but a bicycle. Okay.
Exactly.
Oh, great. You yourself are a pretty fascinating person. You tell me, I know we've spoken a few times here over the last month or so, and that you're an artist. Tell our listeners what medium you work in, what kind of artist you are.
Okay. Yeah, that's a question. I work with a number of different mediums, I guess I do, you know. Print, painting, sculpture, whatever it is, but there's one theme that kind of goes through it, and I've always had to do this, is use recycled materials. So anything that's going to the landfill, my big thing is kind of almost like a big recycling program on a different level. Is things that go to the landfill, people discard them, people don't want them, get them out of my life if it doesn't look good, whatever. I think it's part of what I do is just take that stuff, put a little bit of energy into it, and then it comes back in a different form to them, and they're like, wow, I want that, I'll pay for that. And I think that's just one of the greatest things to me is when I can put my energy, my creativity into something, and people actually want what they threw away before, it's kind of, I love that. Plus, there's the romantic side of materials having history and a different life, and then putting them together in unique ways is just, I don't know, it just holds my interest pretty strongly.
Wow. What are some examples of things that you've rehabilitated?
I've done everything from making, you know, stuff that you wouldn't think is, like, I took wallpaper the other day and I framed it with some barn boards I found from Vermont, but I printed on top of that a fish print. Like, I carved out this print of a fish, and the way I got that print was I was driving across the country to Chicago, and I stopped at the University of Chicago to visit a friend, and they were throwing out all this material, and I said, what is that? And they're like, that's going to be the new gym floor. And I looked at it, and I was like, wow, I bet you can carve into that like a linoleum cut. That's like a practice. So I brought it home, and I actually stuffed my van full of it. I was like, if this works out, I'm going to have hundreds or thousands of dollars worth of this linoleum to cut into. And sure enough, it worked. So then all of a sudden, that's what I use all that for the last like 4 years. I print with this floor of the University of Chicago.
Wow. Really?
Huh. Yeah, and then there's more, you know, simpler stuff. Like, I took an organ one time that had, you plug it into the wall, and there's a fan in it. It blows air across the reeds, and then when you hit a key, it opens that reed and music comes out. I took that fan and replaced it with a different kind of fan. This is technical, not that technical, but took the AC motor, which goes into your wall, took that out, and put it in a direct current, a DC motor. Uh-huh. A DC motor is common on a bicycle generator. If you twist the DC motor, it produces electricity. So the end-all result was this. I took the organ and put it on the handlebars of the bike and then hooked it up to the bicycle wheel through a wire and another motor. So the faster you ride, the louder this organ plays. So you ride around, you know, the city or whatever, and you play music.
Wow. Wow. That's exciting.
Thanks, man.
So, in other words, you've got a musical bicycle that just, you pedal it, and it generates music.
Exactly.
And it doesn't even require pedaling energy as much as it requires wind energy. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, that one actually is, yes, pedal. So what happens is the whole connection would be you have a generator on your back wheel. As that spins, it produces electricity.
Oh, I see.
It goes up to a wire to another motor that's in the organ already.
And, I see.
It generates the wind in there.
Wow. Wow. Do you have that anywhere people can see? Is it at a website somewhere?
No, I mean, that kind of, I handed that off to somebody else. That was a project that was followed me into another apartment, and then I realized, you know, I got other ideas I want to work on, so I gave it away.
Oh, God. You want to build homes where the walls are made out of like old dirt filled refrigerators and washers and stuff like that. What do you call that type of building? What is that called?
Yeah, that's a new idea. A lot of my artwork has houses in it, and I was a carpenter for a while, so I can't really get free of this idea of shelter. I don't know. I'm really, really like that. I also, you know, shelter from all different regions of the world and how they deal with, you know, covering them, their environment. This thing I'm working on now is kind of the same theme, again, using recycled materials. I'm planning this. I don't know if it's going to get done exactly on time or anything, but 2007 I want to try to start a house. And it's going to be an off-the-grid house, which, if you don't know what that means, just a house that you don't plug into the regular electricity from the city or town, and you don't use the water systems and all that. It's kind of being a little more autonomous or self-sufficient. And the unique thing I'm trying to do with that is I want to look at the materials a little bit differently. I'm going to try to use washing machines. And, I mean, this is a goal, so it's not done, or I'm just still planning it. But I'm going to take there's a practice called rammed earth, and basically you take earth, and the common way is you take tires, pack the earth into it, tough, put another layer of tires on top of that, put earth in that, and you build up. And there's sandbag house, earth bag house. They take, you know, not burlap bag, but nylon bags, fill it full of earth or sand, and then you build like that. That kind of has more of a hippie kind of aesthetic to it. I'm trying to steer away from that a bit, and I want to do something a little more, not high design, but I don't know, something that I feel would reflect where I am a little bit more. So I'm going to take the guts out of a washing machine and fill it full of dirt and lay those on top of each other. So the walls of this building will be all dirt encased in these washing machine frames.
Record. Okay, so the R value is what now again? R value? You know, time out. One second. You call that rammed earth? R-A-M-M-E-D,
yeah.
Earth?
Rammed earth, yeah.
Okay, all right. And an R value is as R
value? R
value,
yeah, it's how your house conducts heat and cold and all that. If it's cold outside and the R value of your walls are really low, then heat will just conduct right to your house and you'll be cold. But with this one, there's so much soil in these washing machines. This is my hope, that the R value is going to be very high, and so it will keep out, you know, pretty cold conditions.
Wow. Okay. I also know they call you Serendipity. Seems like wherever you go, you do a fair amount of traveling and end up in certain parts of the country. You've been in Chicago, Portland? Was that one of your...
I lived in Atlanta for a little while, lived in Chicago for a little while, lived in Vermont, but then I've just traveled around the United States quite a bit.
Okay, now where did Serendipity come from? How did that end up being the name that stuck for you?
Yeah, me and you talked about that a little bit. Not everybody knows me as that, but it was just funny. When I lived in Atlanta, I just always, I don't know, it's kind of coming from such a small town. When I got to the big city, it was just amazing what people threw out, so I was just like electrified. It's like walking around, and most people know me from that time at just carrying couches. I had so many couches in my apartment, it was ridiculous.
Okay.
And it's just everything, you know, you find a bike and you realize it only needs this, or a radio that just needs that. And so that was just this great moment. It's like absolute, all the resources I ever wanted were right there.
Uh-huh.
And I was always just walking around looking at stuff like that, and people would come with me, and someone would open up a door and ask us to come in, and then we eat a little bit of dinner, and then they're like, you know, someone called me Serendipity. But the weird part was when I got to Chicago, the same thing happened again. I was doing the same kind of stuff, going to art school and kind of using the same kind of practices, and then a couple people started calling me Serendipity again there, just because some fortunate things happened. One of them was I was walking up the street, and I used to play a lot of music, and I thought I saw a bicycle, so I went up to it, and when I got to it, it was a drum set. And as I'm like, held it up in the air. I was like, look at this. We got a drum set. This guy comes out the door and he says, hey, you want the rest of that? I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, my studio just burned down. I'll get you all the rest of that drum set. So it's kind of like this full-on experience of this guy giving me all this stuff. And at the end, you know, I get a drum set.
Wow. So how'd you end up in Boston?
I was living in Vermont at the time, and I applied for a residency through the Berwick Institute with a friend, Heather Clark. She's going to help me do the busicle.
Mm-hmm.
And we applied, and they basically liked our project, and they said, here, we'll give you $1,000 and some space to build it. And so when we first started it, I mean, I held my imagination wide open, and I didn't put any reality to it. So I was like, how are we going to get this done? But Heather kept on saying, don't worry about it. Let's just get through this part. Let's just put the application together. So when it finally became reality, I was like, man, what are we going to do? And I had a connection with the bike communities in a couple different places, and I knew all my projects, I always have people help me, but this is by far the biggest one. And so I just put out the word. I said, listen, we need the space that the Berwick gave us, Berwick Research Institute here in Boston. They gave us $1,000 and a bit of space, but that space only had a human-sized door, so we actually couldn't fit the bicycle through there. So we actually had to ask people for help on that as well. And what happened was all our calls out to get help were actually all met, and people came out of the woodwork and did all this great stuff for us. That particular problem was solved when this guy, he's an MIT engineer, quit his desk job and opened this place called Sparks, which was basically an industrial art club. This huge warehouse full of all this metalworking stuff and all this woodworking, everything you would ever want, powder coaters, forge, MIG, TIG weld, all the wood shop stuff. He says, listen, you guys can build this project here, you know, for free. And, you know, it was absolutely the best combination ever. So after, basically what happened to me is, as these things kept on falling in line with themselves, I felt a real connection to what I was doing. I kind of felt, you know, hey, man, I got kind of a little bit of calling. This is great to organize all these people. And we had people from all walks of life. And at the end of it, I just realized, I was like, wow, this is a really great experience. Boston has its arms open towards me, and then someone offered me a job, someone offered me an apartment, and I was like, all right, I'm going to try this Boston thing and see where the road takes me.
Okay, but there was a Craigslist in between there and Boston. Seems you put out some kind of a list. Was that tell us about that?
Well, that's kind of going into the whole bicycle stories. We started off at basically nothing, $1,000, and Heather and I were just like going to split it 50-50, $500 each to go try to do this thing. And what happened was I realized I needed help to help design this. So we started meeting with some MIT professors and grad students, a couple of just fabulous ones responsible for a lot of
funny.
One was David Gordon Wilson, who wrote Bicycle Science. And he's just a big bicycle engineer as well as an advocate. And I guess I've been told that he was responsible for making recumbent popular in the United States, but he's just phenomenal with the bikes. A lot of people respect him, and even respected us for having him on our team. And we sat down with him, we worked through some ideas, and we got somewhere. No one had a solution, so we just kept on working it and just said, you know, there's other parts of this we need to work on. So getting space was one. Then this guy saw my posting on Craigslist and that we needed a vehicle. He says, hey, you got your choice of three. It was Charles River Movers or something like that. And so we went down there. He goes, hey, the keys are in them. Take whatever one you want. And they were just, you know, dilapidated, whatever. But we took this van particularly because we thought it would be best. The steering was up front and all that. And we drove that to the space. Now we had a space. So then we still needed our design. And there's some people in Amsterdam. I think Amsterdam or Holland. And with these engineering, there's like 50 engineers got together and built this huge bus, 32 people, and everybody could pedal. It went really slow, but they did it. And so we kind of looked at them for advice, and sure enough, they were interested in helping us. So we improved upon what they did, and now we have our version. But to build it, we needed another call of people. And people came out. There was moms. You know, there was dads, of course. There was teachers. There was professors. There were some tinkerers. There was some junkyard dog, kind of. There was a pastry chef. There was a horn player. There was a videographer. I mean, the list goes on of all these different kinds of people that came out.
Matthew, tell us about Heather. Who is she, and what part has she played in this bicycle project of yours?
Okay. Heather is a longtime friend of mine, one of my best friends. We started dating like 10 years ago, and then, you know, we fell out of love or whatever, but we always stayed best friends. So this is like, it's been neat. We've actually met like 10 years ago. And we always just pass back and forth ideas about utopias and all, you know, painting the streets purple and just always just about like kind of something alternative to the way the mainstream kind of pumps out whatever it does. And so we've always stayed alive on that level, and those conversations have always been great. So Heather and I put this project together, and it's our second collaboration 10 years later. Our first one was when we were in high school, and now, you know, 10 years later, this is our second one together. Anyway, she, in the meantime, you know, went to Cornell and valedictorian, all this great stuff, and went to MIT for real estate. She's interested in doing green building, and she wants to do it in a very unique way. She wants to do, we have similar ideas. She wants to do an off-the-grid project as well. She wants to make sure the building produces its own energy, but also processes its own waste. And she's thinking about doing a housing project in the city, well, this is her hope, in such a way that it's like a community, except she wants to do it almost like an art installation. So everything is aesthetically kind of challenging, and it looks more like an art art piece than actually just housing. So that's what she's working on now.
Wow. Okay, now your bicycle, you know, we talked about the front end of all this. It's got a funny spelling. Can you take us through that spelling so people they can find you on the web?
Yeah, I haven't found a way to get around it. So, bicycle, even though we've gotten quite a bit of grief, I haven't figured out how to change that name. We wanted a bicycle instead of bus cycle, because bus cycle really didn't do it. It had to be integrated, and we wanted bicycle. So the way we spelled it, instead of bicycle, B-I-C-Y-C-L-E, we took bus, B-U-S-Y-C-L-E, so bus cycle.
Huh.
No, it's
okay.
Bicycle.
Okay. And the site is bicycle.com, correct?
B-U-S.
Yep. B-U-S-Y-C-L-E. Did
yep,
I say perfect. That right? Okay. I'll tell you, when you were telling me the web for that the other day, I was just struggling with it. I couldn't seem to get it for some reason. I wanted to make sure that people know what the correct spelling is for that thing. Now, what part did the esteemed David Gordon Wilson, you know, of MIT, one of the men behind the Avatar Recumbent, that those listeners tuned in from the Recumbent realm totally know he's the father of the present-day Recumbent movement. What part did he play in this vehicle?
Well, he did a couple things. I mean, on different levels, he basically got us started. He also gave us a little bit of confidence and validation by being interested in the project. So that was kind of like, it's neat to be working on a project that is supported by, you know, someone like that. So that was cool to be able to chat with him whenever, but actually we did use him in a really practical way. We just basically went to him. We said, our vehicle weighs this much. It has tires this wide. Cutting out wind resistance because it doesn't go that fast. We go, Dave, what kind of ratios do we need on our gearing? And he sat down there. And, you know, we followed him through the first line of numbers, but then it was all squiggles after that. And we just waited for the equal sign. And then that was it. Then we geared everything towards that afterwards. So he was actually pretty instrumental on the actual gearing of this thing.
Wow. Huh. So let's talk about that vehicle. How many people does it fit?
Right now, it's 15 people. One guy steers and pedals, so 14 people pedal.
Oh, now, does this machine have gears?
Yeah, it has gears in two different ways. There's individual gears, so everybody has five gears on their own recumbent bicycle, and they can shift according to what they feel. And then there's moments where either we're going up a hill or going down a hill where the driver actually has the ability to shift into one of his four gears. He even has reverse up there. So
reverse?
Everybody pedals. Yeah, there's reverse.
Oh,
everybody's
wow.
always pedaling. And then when he shifts it into whatever gear he wants, that's where we go.
Wow. So now can this machine, can the bicycle make it up hills?
That's one thing that's been challenging to us is we designed it for a certain grade hill, and in Boston doesn't have that many. So it does fine in this town, but it does go slow when it goes up a hill. So it can do hills, but I wouldn't say it loves that. It likes going downhills.
Okay. Now, in terms of weight, it weighs what, 2 tons and then another ton with people on it? Or
it weighs 1 ton. It weighs about 2,500 pounds, and then I think it doubles that. It weighs up 4,500 pounds.
Wow.
With people on it.
Wow. And you're just using the regular truck tires, right, that came with that Dodge van? Okay.
Yeah, it was a 1989 Dodge van, and that was actually one of the best moments is when we got into Sparks, this huge place, and we drove the van there, brought it into the ramp, parked it, And the people that were surrounding us, one guy, he was the first American team on Junkyard Wars, this British show that had people kind of putting things together as a competition. He was there, and he was a pretty wild man. And we had like, this white legend named Cave Dave, just kind of great about metal stuff. And they kind of just brought us through this whole thing. They told us how to disassemble things, and so we had our people that didn't know anything, then we had our experts, and we just ripped this car apart in one day. And,
wow. Okay. So were you able to use the regular differential, keys up? Yeah.
Yeah. So our if you look at a van, so we took our van and we chopped the shell off the top, and what we were left with was the two rear wheels, the rear axle, the rear differential, the drive shaft up to the transmission, and it was an automatic. So we took that transmission out, and we actually bought a manual transmission and hooked that up, and then the rest of the drivetrain is everything that we made ourselves.
So the peddlers, the guys and gals that are peddling this thing, are somewhere or the other. Did you have to make a bunch of parts, to machine a bunch of parts to be able to connect to the existing drivetrain?
We didn't have to make that many parts. The guys in Holland, I think it was, they had a design where they had a lot more parts. And we just started talking to everybody. So I was calling people from, you know, people in Baltimore, people in Canada, people in California, people in Massachusetts. And basically, through all that, we just kept on throwing the idea on the board until one person just said, you know, it's got to go this way. And then we said, that's great. And then we take it to the next level. So ours doesn't have that many moving parts. It looks pretty cool, though. It's got, like, some pretty hefty chains on it.
Yeah? Huh. Yeah. So, like, essentially, I guess, what did you have to, like, weld gears onto the drive shaft or something like that?
I try to get into the technical thing without killing anybody, but it's basically everybody has a seat that they sit on, and their feet go out to the pedals, and as they spin those pedals, it goes back from their front crank back to the rear hub. Well, that rear hub, which would have a tire on it on a regular bicycle, has been stripped down and modified, so it actually has another gear on there with another chain. So you're pedaling, and it's going back to your rear hub, but that rear hub now has an extra gear on it and another chain, and that chain goes back to, we call them the countershaft. So there's two countershafts that collect energy. Everybody is facing sideways and out. So as this vehicle is going forward, you're 90 degrees to your destination where you're going. So one side collects on one countershaft, and the other side collects on the other countershaft. Both of them transmit to the front, and then there's an intricate gearing system that brings it down to the transmission, and it goes back to the drive shaft, back to the rear differential, and the wheel.
Who designed the transmission?
The transmission itself, we bought. So that was something that was out of a Muncie truck.
Okay. It sounded to me like you kind of had a complicated way of converting this pedal driven power to the transmission, but I guess
that's the question. Yeah, that was basically based off the Holland idea, and then this guy from California said, "Hey, why don't you modify it in this way?" We took that and then we put it into our think tank, and what we came out with, it kind of looks like a heart in a way, but it's like one shaft is spinning one way and one shaft is spinning the other way. So one is a connection that's simple, it spins and it turns the transmission the correct way. The other one is spinning the opposite way, so we had to do reverse gearing. And it'd be a lot easier if you saw a photo, but basically instead of running the chain on top of the gear, we ran it underneath it and put two counter gears to hold that up. So it does a useful thing there.
Okay, this is all stuff that I know I've got to see, and I know I don't think I've seen it at your website. Do you have pictures of this somewhere?
We're in the process of updating our website. So
great. Okay. Excellent. Okay. Well, this is pretty powerful stuff. Let's go beyond the technical and talk about. You've touched on this, but how has the building of it brought the community together?
Yeah. So I mean, that was something a little bit unexpected for everybody. I usually, when I build my artwork, I usually involve friends. Sometimes I've been involving some schools, like some kids that are like at risk or whatever. I said, hey, come build this thing. And for me, it's always been pretty profitable endeavor, not money-wise, but just in terms of when you're planning something so big as an art installation where, you know, you cover the whole gallery, someone will come up with an idea that you never thought of, and it really makes that part that much better. So I've always been really open to working with people. This one, we basically opened up. I thought I was going to contact Critical Mass or some bike people, but what climbed out of the woodwork was just from all walks of life. So at the end, we had about 50 different people come and help us on this thing. And it was a situation where I almost felt like my main goal was to make an environment that was pretty satisfying to be in terms of you can come in, we provided food, and I helped people get there. And then when they were there, they would either say, you know, I don't have any experience, what can I do? And I'd set them up for the job, and they'd learn a new task that day. Or someone goes, I know exactly what I want to do. What do you guys have for me today? And I can do it. So in that way, we just collected all these people, and the environment just had a real nice vibe to it for about a month during that time we built it.
Wow. And how many of you work in, like, 3-4 days a week, or with a bunch of...
I had a situation when I left Vermont. I posted on Craigslist. I said, listen, I'm not going to have a ton of money, but I'd like to move to Boston and not work. Is there anybody willing to put me up? And this woman responded. She said, listen, if you're a carpenter, come work for me 4 days a month, and I'll give you this apartment. When I got the apartment, it was, yeah, this huge floor, you know, a whole floor of a building, and it was way more than I've had since. So, I mean, it was a great environment. So I had the ability to work on it every day, so I would just constantly meet up with people, whoever wanted to go up there, and just work on it almost every day.
So you had the bicycle at this apartment? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, we actually had it the whole time at this place called Spark. So it was
okay.
Just an industrial arts club.
Okay, but so why would they come to your apartment?
Well, that's one of the things that I didn't really love about the project is that we actually had to drive out to this warehouse. So
I see.
That was something that was kind of counter. I mean, we're dealing with like $1,000 in a dream, so it's kind of like
right.
That was a sacrifice we had to make. So we drove people out. It was about a 20-minute drive, so I would collect everybody at my house, pack them in the car, and we'd all drive out there and work for the day.
Yeah, got it. Okay, got it. That sounds like that was like essentially your apartment became the staging zone then, huh?
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. Now, when you get that thing out there on the road, you talk about the fact that it's there's cameras everywhere you take it. People are smiling. People just light up. Talk about that for just a second.
So our experience was right down to the wire. We were trying to get this thing built, and the city got involved with this. They said, hey, we like your project. Can you be in two events for us? One was Hub on Wheels, which is a bicycle event that just started. It's going to be an annual thing here in Boston. But it basically brings the mayor there and says, let's talk about biking in a real way with the city involved and the, you know, the grassroots. The other one was Boston's 375th anniversary, and they said, hey, be in the float in this. So we basically just worked right down to the deadline, and it really was not working the night before. So we were kind of calling everybody. We called Dave Wilson on the phone, got Alan Armstrong, another professor, and we had Carl Kurtz, the guy from Bikes Not Bombs, and just everybody giving us advice, and they kind of all kind of seemed to say the same thing. We just had to get it done. So people just started working, and the last two nights we just slept at the warehouse. So people were working 6 o'clock in the morning, and then the last night people worked all the way into the morning to the next day. We loaded it up on the trailer and brought it in, and we still didn't know if it worked, but sure enough, as soon as we got on the thing, it started riding. And then it was just like, from that moment on, it was like a success story. Like everybody was just staring at this thing and laughing and taking photos. And so we did the Hub on Wheels parade, and we got the mayor on there, you know, and he's doing his thing, and we're pedaling him around. And then we decided to take it to the Boston anniversary parade. And, you know, we were very tired. People hadn't slept in, you know, a long time, 24, 48 hours or whatever. and so we were just in this kind of haze. It just felt really good to get done with the project and have that much kind of energy around it. But we got to the parade, and the woman said, you know, listen, you're late. You can't be here. And I was like, well, I got this letter from the mayor saying, you know, we are going to be late because we had to go to another one of his events. Can we please be in it? And she says, hold on. And then about 10 minutes later, she's like, when we felt we were, like, not going to be in it, she's like, hey, get your ass in there. And she goes, get behind Boston Big Beans and in front of Berklee School of Music. So we got in there. And what happened was, as we're riding on the parade, I mean, there's 10,000 people. This is, like, a very orgasmic moment. I mean, we've gotten this thing done. It works. And now people are lined up on the street as we're going down. But as the speed is going, people are looking at the floats, but when they see ours, it's just like, yeah, so we thought to ourselves, you know, I was thinking, you know, maybe it's just these parades, how it's set up, and there's already a lot of energy there, and people have got their leisure time and all that, and so maybe that's why they're so psyched about the busicle. But we took it out the other day to bring it to a new warehouse where we're going to work on it before we go on our trip across the United States. And we went all through the back roads so that we didn't have to deal with the police or whatever. But what happens is, like, taxis start honking, people on the street start freaking out. It just basically, anybody who's looking at it has a reaction to it. And that's something I never really thought would happen when we built the thing. We were trying to do it more as an art project. But right now, it's got the spectacle kind of thing going for it. Like, when we take it out, it definitely draws a lot of people to it. And everybody's either yelling, pointing. Yeah, one of the things I think why it's so appealing for people is we set it up so it's basically, when you're looking at it, it's seven people shoulder to shoulder, all smiles, pedaling as it goes by. So it just automatically makes you feel like kind of wild when you look at it. It's all these people going by and this crazy machine, and your mind just goes.
All right. Okay, so you're bringing that out here to San Francisco in June, and I want people to know that you're bringing it out in a truck. But before you do that, there's some reverse engineering work that's got to be done to the machine. You got to make some of it more bulletproof. Can you tell us a little bit of what that entails?
All right, yeah. So when we built this thing, I mean, there's even situations where we'd be in the warehouse working on it, and someone would come in that I've never seen before, and he looked me right in the eyes like, "You're doing it wrong." I was like, "Hey, how you doing?" He's like, "Yep, you're doing it wrong." I was like, "Okay, how you doing?" He's like, "You're doing it wrong. I would do it this way," and I'd listen to his thing. So basically what happened, that happened a lot. People would tell us we're doing it wrong. And I would just say, you know, listen, if you want to do, you know, Busicle 2.0, let's do it your way. But for this one, we have to make these certain decisions. We had to use the chassis of a van because everybody says that's too heavy. But for $1,000 and for two people that didn't know that much about how to put together a Busicle, we decided that would be our solution. So there's things on there that aren't great. All right, well, one of the things we had on there was the derailleur. We flipped it around and ran it backwards. So instead of it changing gears and being a chain tensioner, we just had it as a chain tensioner, but it was backwards. So it kind of did this different kind of motion to it. That, I think, was obviously not designed that way. So that's one of the things that it works, but doesn't work great. So we're thinking about taking those out and putting in some more chain tensioners that are more specifically designed for that task. One other thing is the seats, because our vehicle trying to comply with some stuff that, you know, a car would, you know, only being 108 inches across, it makes the legroom kind of short. So we are actually adjusting our seats so that our seats can go a little higher so people can have more legroom, because that was one of the complaints, is it was too tight in there, which I completely agree. A long ride on that thing is painful the way it is.
Okay. Now, you also say you'd like to see other communities build these busicles. You ever thought about drawing up plans and then selling those?
Yeah, no, I never did. I don't think that's going to be my walk in life. I don't think I'm good at patents or anything like this. Mm-hmm. If someone else wants to do it, that's fine, and I'd be excited to be part of that. But I can't spend my time doing that. I don't have the energy to put into all the business side of things.
I just like
more making things.
Great. Okay. Now, you're coming out here, as I said, to San Francisco. The expo you're coming out for is called Get on the Bus, and it's put on by Cityscape. Is that correct?
Yeah, Cityspace.
Cityspace. Okay. And how can you get us a date on that and where exactly it's located at and if there's a website or not?
Yeah, I think if you look up Cityspace and Get on the Bus, I think you'll get to them.
Okay.
Go, and I don't actually know the area, but we're going to be there. The show opens on the 16th of June.
Never talk about that. You arrive from San Francisco.
We're going to start in Boston, and we're going to start June 1st in Boston and end up in San Francisco on the 16th. Across the way, we're going to stop at different cities and do a public ride in each city. And then we're also going to do a little screen of a trailer. A woman has been shadowing us from the beginning. She's interested in the project in a number of different ways. She wanted to talk about transportation and bicycle culture, and our project collected a lot of people from a lot of different arenas in Boston. She's making a little film well, actually, she's making a big film, but her trailer is going to be played at some venues. And we're thinking about doing like a little bit of a speaking tour. I'm not sure exactly how that will work out. But then the more conceptual part, which we're working out the details as well, is as we cross the country, we're asking people if they want to contribute to the project at all by building something and hopefully having an add-on. So right now we're in the preliminary designs of how what we need and what people can do in that amount of time. So hopefully as we go across, our bicycle will change its shape and, you know, its look a little bit as people, you know, we'll get to Providence or we'll get to New York City or we'll get to, you know, Chicago. People add on little bits like seat covers or maybe an emblem. And Martin and I, we've been talking, maybe someone's going to, you know, pour an emblem that we can put on the front of the bicycle.
That's Max Chen. Max Chen out here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So that stuff is great. I mean, that's kind of right down the pipe of what we want to do is keep this open, have people have energy coming from good sources, as in they believe in bicycles, or they believe in alternative transportation, or they believe, hey, the war shouldn't be fought because of oil, you know? They come out and they put their energy in. This is kind of like a platform to say, hey, I have these certain values, but I also want to be doing something instead of just talking. So this is not to say this is going to solve any solutions at all to this bicycle. You know, it doesn't work efficiently at all, but I think it's a conversation piece.
Okay, so you're coming out here the 16th of June. You're going to be here for, what, a couple of weeks for that expo in San Francisco? And
exactly.
Then, okay. And then there's the month of July. Let's see, we got June, the month of July, within which I'm going to drop a bombshell and say that you're going to tour the San Francisco Bay Area for the National Bicycle Greenway. Is that correct?
Yeah, that'd be beautiful. I mean, that's something that you and I have been talking about, and it seems like that would be a perfect fit and really really right down the pipe for us in terms of doing fun bicycle stuff.
Great. Okay, so now that means that I'm asking you, this thing's got to perform. you're going to do all our relays. You're going to go Berkeley to Oakland's only 7 miles. But then Hayward to San Jose and to San Jose back up to Peninsula Palo Alto, then to San Francisco. It's going to really put it to the test. Do you feel that, you know, I know that when Mayor Menino rolled on it, piloted it last fall, that you guys had your fingers crossed. You going to be ready come July 25?
That's my whole hope. So we wrote a little bit of a grant and got, you know, a tiny bit of money, not anything great, but enough to kind of put some improvements that were much needed. So I think by the time it gets to San Francisco, you know, it will have the love and attention that it needed, and I think it should run pretty well. Going up hills, it goes slow, so if people are willing to work with it, then that's the only challenge, but I think it will definitely roll.
Okay, I know that when Scott Campbell had his riverboat Queen that he entered in the Kinetic Sculpture Contest when he had it at the Santa Cruz Bike to Work Day, that it was, I think, a 6-person vehicle, and we had a hill in Santa Cruz he had to get up, and everyone got out and pushed, and we helped him while he pedaled, and the bicycle riders were on the side pushing, but it made it, and I guess that's something we can do with your machine, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, me and you even have been talking a little bit. I think this project is a little, I'm getting, as I go and do more and more art projects, I realize I give myself more time. It used to be just hop in the van, get a bunch of people together, collect all this stuff, and build something in one night. And now it's more, hey, let's sit down. What do we want to do? Do we want to waste our time this way? Do we want to do this? And so we were even chatting that if we get a hill, hopefully it'd be a little more dramatic if we actually hooked up bikes to the front of this thing with ropes, almost like a horse carriage.
All right. I like that. All right. Okay, now here's the bombshell. Over and beyond the bombshell of you being out here come our Bay Area portion of the Mayor's Ride, when we ultimately meet with Gavin Newsom in San Francisco, you feel you're going to be ready enough to roll with that in 2007 when I do my author tour of the United States on my high wheel bicycle. Are we going to see you there then, Matthew?
Yeah, no, that sounds great. One of the things, I'm putting a lot of energy into it now so we can get across the country and have people contribute to it and add on and change the form. But one of my greatest hopes would be that a little group forms around this thing and it, you know, goes beyond me and people say, hey, this is worth taking care of or improving on. And so they take it upon themselves to keep this thing going. So by the time 2007 rolls around, it's ready to go, and it's got a little posse with it. And because, I mean, that's a dream come true. I mean, that's kind of like the funniest thing in the world, if people actually are willing to pedal across the United States on this thing. Because what happens, everybody shoulders to shoulder, so it just immediately starts conversation. And these conversations are usually pretty wacky. So for me, it's just like this thing. Everybody's getting together to kind of go across the country.
Wow. I'm so excited. Well, listen, we've reached that point in the interview where we've pretty much got to start wrapping up. Anything you'd like to add, Matthew?
Oh, man. No, I think that's pretty much the story of the bicycle. And we're going to be going across the United States. So when we put our website together and we get more of our mission statement for how our tour is going to unfold, then we should be getting our geared up and head out June 1st.
Great. Okay, well, I'll tell you, it's been an extreme pleasure talking to you. It always is, you know. I feel in a way like I'm catching you at a time when I don't have to go through PR agents, because this thing's going to be huge as it gets more and more as it gets more and more known about it. It's like I'm not going to be able to even talk to Matthew Mazzotta.
No, that's the thing. I don't want to be attached to this thing. I mean, attached in the way I do, but I want it to have its own life. I can't talk about myself too long. I kind of get burned out.
Well, all I can say is just thanks for you. Totally, Matthew. This is very exciting. I can't wait to see you and your machine come the end of July. Thanks for the time you spent with us today.
Hey, Martin. It's always awesome.
All right, Kay. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Talk to you.
Take care, Matthew. Bye-bye.
That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. For more info about the NBG, go to nationalbicyclegreenway.com. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.